It's not like any other podcast, coming to you straight from the heartland, where investing is told like it is. It's time for Darren Garman's Paranoid Banker Podcast. Hold on, because here comes the next episode of the Paranoid Banker Podcast.
Hey everybody, Darren Garman here, and I want to welcome you to this week's podcast. And what we're going to be talking about this week is what apartment properties to avoid, or what kind of apartment properties to avoid. As we start getting to really a close of 2017, I've already been contacted by a number of investors talking about getting involved in an apartment property, either with us, with me, or on their own in, you know, their own city, state, not surprisingly, no matter what direction they're planning on going in, a lot of questions about apartments. What kind of apartment should I be looking for? What should I be thinking of? Lots of things. And so what I really wanted to do is, on this week's podcast, really, I guess, make it easy for investors to think about what kind of apartment properties they need to avoid. You know, in terms of having some kind of a, I guess I'd call it a course on, you know, what to look for and how to analyze and what do you need to know and how do you need, so all those kinds of things. We're just going to save that for another time. I thought probably a really good thing to do now is really get what I would consider more basic stuff out of the way in terms of what should you be looking for? And really, more importantly, what should you be avoiding. I'm going to be giving you three or four apartment properties that you really need to avoid. These kinds of properties are fraught with mistakes, fraught with financial issues, and I'm not talking about the good kind of issues. I'm talking about the bad, and not only that, but an enormous waste of your time and an enormous amount of frustration you can avoid by steering clear of these kinds of properties. Now, I'm going to mention these three or four, and I think you're going to be surprised at one or two, quite frankly. I'm going to hit you with my first one here in just a moment, and I know you're going to be surprised by it. But there's going to be a couple, you know, oh yeah, okay, sure, I probably knew that. And maybe some of this will be a little bit of covering some things that maybe you already know, but I got a feeling there's going to be a couple in here that you're going to be maybe surprised at. And so let's just jump into it, shall we? Let's just jump into the kind of apartment properties you need to avoid. And number one on my list, which I'm just going to start out with what I consider the big surprise. I think this one will be the biggest surprise to our investors, or those looking to invest. I should say to investors, actually. And the kind of properties you need to avoid is new construction. That's number one, new construction. And surprised, aren't you? A lot of people are surprised when I tell them they need to run away from new construction. Let me tell you a story about new construction. So a friend of mine and a couple of partners decided they were going to build, this would have been a couple of years ago, a 100 plus unit apartment complex. Okay? And so they went ahead and went through the process of building it, got it finally built. At the end of the day, they're looking at selling it. Right? So they weren't really interested in holding it. They were going to build it to sell it. By the way, very, very nice property, very nice location. It had all of the kind of amenities that you would expect from a newly constructed property. Location's great. Construction's very nice. Units are extremely nice. Put it this way, you'd have no trouble living there. You would have no problem living there. Okay? They ended up selling it for millions of dollars less than what they ended up investing in it. Millions. And by the way, the people that bought the property from them, when it comes time for them to sell, guess what's going to happen? That's right. They are going to lose millions as well. And so the problem that you run into with new construction, there's really two. And I hit the first one. And that is conventional wisdom would tell you that when you spend money on building something, the cost of construction, that property should continue to grow higher in value, correct? So if I spend $10 million on building a property, that property damn well better be worth $12 million in a year or two, mainly because cost of construction, right? No, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't. Because the main emphasis on a property's value is based on the income stream it produces, not how much money you spend on wood and floors and garages and appliances and roofs and all those kinds of things. Okay? The main barometer, the tipping point of value in any apartment property is the income the property produces. So at the end of the day, the property's got to produce the kind of income to support what you paid for it, right? And so if you paid $10 million for the property to be built, but you don't make enough income there to pay your debt or pay your loans or even produce any kind of cash flow, you've got an issue. New construction properties are fraught with these kinds of issues. Fraught with projections of blue sky. Here's how much we think we can rent them for. And they don't rent for that much. Fraught with issues regarding how long the project is going to take and how much money it's going to take to complete the project. Has anything you really ever known that you can count on more than three fingers come in under budget and took less time than you thought? Of course not. Of course not. So the $10 million property actually cost $11.5 million, and it came in 6 months late, and now you're behind the eight ball, etc., etc. And by the way, not only am I talking about investing in a property while it's under construction, I'm talking about running away from one that was just constructed. So I told you that these folks, this friend of mine, sold the property and took $1 million plus bath, pretty close to $2 million. Well, the people that bought it from them, they're going to take a bath when they sell it too. Because there's no way they're going to be able to get the kind of price that they paid for the property in the next 5 or 10 years. Now, if they don't have any thoughts of selling in the next 20 years, oh, okay, well, that's a different story. But if you're looking at being involved in it for at least 10 to 15 years or less, you're going to have a big, big problem. Why? Because the income stream the properties produce in newly constructed properties does not usually support the price you pay for the construction. Don't forget that. In a lot of markets right now, there's a lot of new construction going on. And by the way, we need it, to be honest with you, because more and more people are going to be looking at renting apartments, no doubt about it. And that is going to continue to grow and grow and grow, especially over the next 4 to 5 years. But anyway, so it's kind of tempting. Well, why don't we invest in the property? We'll build it and hold it and maybe sell it 5 to 10. Stay away from newly constructed properties. Even though they look nice and shiny and everything's new, and you don't think you're going to have much in the way of capital improvements, repairs, and maintenance, and management will be easy, et cetera, et cetera. And by the way, some of what I just covered is true. It is, but don't let it fool you. Do not get involved in a newly constructed property. Let somebody else do that. And then after it's been owned one or two times and has gone around the block, so to speak, in ownership for 5 to 7 years, maybe 10 years, then take a look at picking it up. Because you will pick it up for much, much less than what it was constructed at and what previous owners have paid for it. I guarantee that will be the case in most markets. Not all, but in most. Okay, so new construction, run away from it. I knew that would surprise many of you. We do not own any newly constructed properties. None of my partnerships own any newly constructed properties, nor will we purchase any newly constructed properties, okay, for all of the reasons that I just told you. Now, there is one exception to this, and that is purchasing an existing property and doing improvements to it, right? So if I can go in and purchase a property for $30,000, $40,000 a unit, put $5,000 to $8,000, maybe even $10,000 a unit into it, and I can go ahead and work on creating the income stream from those improvements to support those improvements and create a property that's going to be higher value, sure. I mean, that's a great deal because I'm into it for, what, $30,000 a unit, not $100,000 a unit to start out. Because when you buy a newly constructed property, you're paying top of the market right away. Oh, and here's the other thing. I forgot to mention this. Because you're paying so much money for the property, especially if you finance it, you have to, right out of the gate, get as high of rent for each unit as you can. You can't rent it for a little bit less just to kind of get things going. You can't work with residents to maybe have some rent specials just to get things going. You got to get top of the market rents right out of the block, and you better get them fast. Whereas if you purchase an existing property, you don't necessarily have to worry about that so much. You can actually charge a little bit less rent than maybe some of the competition, and it'll still pencil out just fine. So, new construction, not the kind of investment that I would recommend. All right, so that's number one. Number two, apartment property to avoid. Converted housing. Converted housing. Now, there's two types of converted housing that I mean by this. I'll mention the first one because that'll be easy to get through. The first is a commercial property that's now been converted into condos. So let's say it was a warehouse and now it's been converted into condos, or a big office building and now it's been converted into condos. Heck, even maybe a church. I've even seen churches that have been converted and gone on the market. No. Any kind of commercial property where there's some kind of conversion, you want to run away from as fast as you possibly can. Not a good idea. And you certainly don't want to inherit someone else's construction nightmare mess from the conversion process. Because if you think after you buy it, you're not going to continue to have issues because of the property wasn't originally built as an apartment property, you are sadly mistaken. It'll be very expensive. Most of the time, they will be hard to rent. And most of the time, it will be hard to maintain any kind of consistent occupancy. Not all. There are always outliers out there, sure. But most of the time, there's not. So, commercial property, warehouse, office building, churches, whatever, converted into apartments. No. Run away from those. Then there's the other kind of converted housing. And those are the big, you know, three-story homes that were constructed as 4 or 5 bedroom houses. But over time, they've converted into, let's say, 10, 12 sleeping rooms, right? And so instead of it being a 4 bedroom house, now that it's been converted into 15 sleeping rooms and you're charging $200 a month per room and that may be the investment that, at least on the surface, sounds pretty good. You want to run away from those even faster than the commercial property converted into apartments property scenario. Even faster. Here's why. Number one, the management is just terrible. Think about it. You got 30-plus people in one small building. It's not good. And they're sharing stuff. A lot of times they're sharing bathrooms. They're sharing parking lots. They're sharing places to grill out their food if they want to have a grill out. They're sharing places to have friends over. It's not good. Too many people in a combined space like that is not good. And in addition to that, many of the population that rent rooming houses, not all, but many, are very transient kind of folks. So that means that they don't have a job. Some of them may have a part-time job. They make a little bit of money. So what does that mean? They spend most of their time at home, hanging out. And what does that mean? Trouble. They cause trouble. They get into arguments with their roommates, with the neighbors across the hall. They're causing all sorts of problems and issues. And pretty soon, you've got a whole house full of people pissed off at each other, right? In addition to that, the repair and maintenance costs are astronomical, mainly because these buildings are so old, and even if they do have a little bit of freshness to them in terms of age, all of those people in those the wear and tear is significant. And so the interesting thing about converted properties is the numbers always look really, really good. So, I mean, why wouldn't they? If I can pay $100,000 for a 15-room sleeping house and I pencil it out, holy cow, I'm making nice double-digit returns. On the surface, the numbers look almost unavoidably appealing. Like, who wouldn't do this? This is a no-brainer. Believe me, it isn't. You want to stay away. It is more problem and more headache than you would ever imagine from a management standpoint. You won't collect nearly the amount of money that you think. The expenses will eat up the majority of the profits that you think you'll get. And at the end of the day, even if you have it managed, your management team is going to be exhausted dealing with these folks. And it's just going to be a nightmare. I have a quick story for you, another one. I had a gentleman contact me. He's not one of our partners, but he was considering getting involved in a property with us in the fund, actually, the flagship fund, and a property that came up for sale in Kentucky. He doesn't live in Kentucky, but evidently he got hooked into a property that was for sale in Kentucky. So I want you to think about this. Here was the property. 4-unit converted house, each apartment renting for $500 a month. He could buy it for $11,000. So do the math really quick. If you do, sounds like a really, really good deal, doesn't it? So he buys it. He basically ended up abandoning the property. I think he sold it for like $1,000 at the end of the day. And this was after he spent tens of thousands of dollars on the property. Not so much because it needed a bunch of capital improvements when he took over, because it did. But for all of the reasons that I just told you, that property lost money month after month. He had 1 month of positive cash flow from a property he spent not that much money on. Okay, and I've seen this in really big properties too, really big ones too. I've seen it firsthand. I'm talking 25 to 30 plus converted rooms for rent at one time, like a hotel. And it was not good. So converted housing, stay away from it. Commercial, stay away from it. Sleeping houses, big properties converted into sleeping houses. No, stay away. All right. Let's go into the third kind of property that I really think you need to avoid. And that is low income housing properties. I've got an exception to it, and I'll talk about that exception later. Low income housing, specifically government subsidized housing, especially. And so when I tell people this, many are surprised. I'm going to tell you the exception here in just a minute. But for the most part, you want to stay away from these kind of properties. And most people are surprised when I say stay away from government subsidized or low income housing. And it's not because I've got anything against low income. That's not it. Okay. So it's not because I've got anything against anyone that's low income or has a low income or is on some kind of a subsidy or getting some kind of assistance. That's not it at all. Has nothing. I'm talking investing here. Okay. The problem with government subsidized housing is really, at the end of the day, you don't own the property, the government does. Okay? And you may be thinking, what do you mean? No, I don't own the property, the government does. Well, here's what I'll tell you, and this is through direct experience. When you agree to accept residents that are getting a rental subsidy to pay you, you're giving up many rights that you think you have as your bundle of rights as a property owner. Namely, now, whichever agency is paying you money, rent money, on behalf of a tenant, they're going to tell you what you should do to the property, when you should do it, how much money you should spend, what color paint you should buy, when the improvements need to be done, when rent can go up, when rent can go down, when you can charge rent, charge more for utilities, when you can't charge more for utilities, etc., etc., etc. When you can sell, when you can't sell. If you want to refinance the property with some government subsidized properties, guess what you have to do? You have to tell the tenants that that's what you're doing and give them a time period to comment on it. You think I'm kidding? I'm not kidding. Unbelievable. Think about this. Think about your own, the home you live in. Okay? Let's say, you know, let's say you live in a house right now or a condo. What do you think if all of a sudden, when you decided you wanted to sell, your lender said, "Oh, well, sorry, you can't sell right now. We don't think it's a good time." What would you do? You'd be a little bit mad, wouldn't you? And that's the way it is with government subsidized housing. The government owns the property because they tell you everything you can and can't do. Even though they're not on the deed and you are, it's not worth it. Okay? It is not worth it. They are minding the store, and that store is your property. Here's one exception to this. One exception is if you have a government subsidized property in a very, very good location. Unfortunately, the majority, not all, the majority of government subsidized housing, HUD housing, low-income housing, are also located in low-income neighborhoods, okay? And not surprisingly, the resale of those kinds of properties is not very good, not very good at all. However, if you happen to have an opportunity come up where you can invest in a property that is in a good area, an up-and-coming, growing neighborhood, then that is something to take a look at, okay? Again, direct experience. So we've been involved with a large property. So I just told you stay away from government-subsidized housing, didn't I? Okay? One of our largest properties we own is a government-subsidized property. So you're probably thinking, Darren, what the heck are you talking about? You just told me to stay away from those kind of properties. And I did, under most circumstances, except this one. The reason why we decided to buy this government subsidized property, this HUD property, was because of the location. Excellent. Excellent location, growing area, continuing to grow, continuing to develop around this property. It is not a low-income area, and the property does not look like a low-income housing property. That's why. Because we know, due to what's going on with the area, we know that financially it will be worth it because there will be continued investment in this area, i.e. this property. Again, if it was in a low-income area, we wouldn't have bought it. But it was in a really good area that continues to grow, so that's something that we look at. But that's really the only exception. Okay. That's really the only exception. And so those were really the top three apartment properties that I really think you need to avoid. Anything I didn't tell you to avoid, I think you should take a look at. How about that? How about that way of looking at it? With one exception, I'm going to talk to you about this on my next podcast, which is going to be a surprise for many of you. Single family homes. Even though they're technically not an apartment, I also do not recommend single family homes. But I'm going to wait until next week to talk about why and why you should also not consider owning a single-family home as a income property. We'll talk about that next week during our podcast and how single-family homes stack up to apartment properties. We'll talk about all that kind of stuff in next week's podcast. So let's top this off. Top three you want to avoid is number one, new construction. Surprise number one, right? Number two, any kind of conversions. Big three-story houses that were converted or commercial properties that were converted into apartments. And then lastly, government subsidized housing. And that's federal government, city government, state government, etc. Because they will have the say-so on what you can and cannot do, even so much in some cases as telling you when you can sell, when you can't sell, and even making sure that you have to contact tenants in the event you decide you want to actually just refinance the property. Okay, stay away from those. And as I said, more to come on single-family homes during the podcast next week. All right, have a great day, everybody. Have a great holiday week. I hope your Thanksgiving holiday goes terrific. And I'm thankful to have you as part of our investment group and look forward to continuing to share this information with you. Get your feedback and comments. And again, have a great holiday, Thanksgiving. Take care, everybody. We'll see you. All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining Darren Garman's Paranoid Banker Podcast. For investment questions, comments, or to get in touch with Darren, go to www.garmanblog.com. Thanks for joining Darren Garman's Paranoid Banker Podcast. For investment questions, comments, or to get in touch with Darren, go to www.garmanblog.com.